This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry, pivoting on the brink this hour, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. And we're going to speak of a number of brinks and pivot points on this Earth Day. Thanks so much for listening. Among the brinks we will be speaking about, a moment of emergence for transgender people following on social changes and growing social acceptance for gays and legalization of gay marriage. Crossing this threshold comes with some awkward moments, though, and we will speak about how the awkward question can be a signal of social change. When have you asked or been asked an awkward question? How did you handle it? We'd love to know. 877-8-MY-TAKE. Also, Earth on the Brink. We will speak of the mass extinction in the cards from human impacts on resources and climate, and think about the tipping points of reduced biodiversity and our planet's future. But first to Ukraine. And if you're keeping track, Ukraine is the latest and this week one of the closest U.S. allies in Europe. Here's Vice President Joe Biden.
We've heard a lot from Russian officials in the past few days. But now it's time for Russia to stop talking and start acting. Act on the commitments that they made.
Joe Biden is in Kiev to reassure the Ukrainian government, and those reassurances come as last week's de-escalation pact in eastern Ukraine continues to unravel. The U.S. is accusing Russian agents of acting inside Ukraine. And here is Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov accusing Ukraine of doing the unraveling.
The Geneva Agreement is not only not being implemented, but also steps are being taken, primarily by those who've seized power in Kiev, that's a crude violation of the agreements reached in Geneva.
All this is happening this week as President Obama begins a week-long visit to Southeast Asia, flying to Japan with stops in South Korea, Malaysia, and the Philippines. With the Ukraine crisis rippling around the world, where are the unpredictable tipping points that could produce new confrontations? Joining us is Fyodor Lukyanov, editor-in-chief of the journal Russia in Global Affairs and chair of the Council on Foreign and Defense Policy. Fyodor Lukyanov, welcome.
Hello.
And Jonathan Fenby, also with us, China director of the research company Trusted Sources and author of Will China Dominate the 21st Century? Jonathan Fenby, welcome back.
Hello.
So let's talk, first of all, about the developments over the last 24 hours in Ukraine. Fyodor Lukyanov, you have suggested that there's something of a farce going on in the sense that the confrontation between Ukrainian forces and the pro-Kremlin forces are almost scripted in the way they're confronting each other. What did you mean?
I mean that everything happening in Ukraine seems a little bit farcical. And of course, it's all the time on the brinkmanship of a real tragedy because the country is ungoverned, unguided. But at the same time, when we hear about military operation, counterterrorism operation on the one side, and on the other side about strong separatist forces, and then you speak to people who are there and you speak to those you know in this region, nothing happens there, in fact. This is a theater.
Can Joe Biden, the U.S. vice president, accomplish anything? Can he actually keep the Ukrainian government afloat here on some level politically?
Joe Biden, of course, is there to demonstrate political and moral support for Kiev, for the government in Kiev. And in this regard, it's very much needed for them because they lack both credibility and legitimacy in the eyes of many Ukrainians living in the eastern part. But I don't think that Biden would be able to change dynamics in this country because so far we don't see any attempts by Kiev, by the government, to launch a real dialogue with those forces in eastern part who actually are not necessarily separatists. They just want that their interests and their views will be taken into account by Kiev authorities.
You have suggested that, at least in the view of a lot of people in Russia, that Vladimir Putin may have already overplayed his hand in eastern Ukraine and that the Russian government does not have the capacity to absorb on any level these territories. What did you mean by that, and do you stand by that right now?
Yes, I still stand by that, and I'm absolutely sure that Russian leadership has no plans, no intention, and no desire to take more of Ukrainian territory. Crimea was a unique case. Crimea is a very special chapter. Crimea has never belonged to Ukraine before, and it was seen by many people in Russia and in Crimea as a historic accident. For eastern part, it's completely different, and I think that if Russia will be forced to go there to invade this part of Ukraine, that will be, in fact, a huge defeat to Russia. And it is seen in this way by Kremlin as well, because the level of problems created by this move is absolutely uncalculated.
Noting the differences and similarities between what's going on in eastern Ukraine and what happened earlier this year in Crimea, that's Fyodor Lukyanov, editor-in-chief of the journal Russia in Global Affairs. So, Jonathan Fenby, what does all this Cold War rhetoric do to the models for political relationships in Asia? The president is going to Asia. Once again, the distraction is all in Europe and Russia. Do the Cold War models emerge in discussions in Asia all of a sudden?
Well, yes, because you've got a series of confrontations happening in East Asia involving China, with Japan on the one side and with countries in the South China Sea on the other, notably the Philippines and Vietnam, although others, Indonesia, Malaysia, are being dragged into this. And certainly America's allies in the region, notably Japan and the Philippines, of course, are watching what's happening in Ukraine quite carefully, because this comes after a period in which there was certainly a feeling around in East Asia that the Obama administration's declaration of a Pacific pivot, an Asian pivot, which was supposed to be the guiding light of foreign policy, really hasn't worked through in practice. And also the trade pact, the TPP as it's called, for the Pacific region, which Washington had tried to push and which would have excluded China, that's run into a lot of obstacles too, particularly from Japan. So there's a lot of questioning in this region as to how strong the commitment of the US is in the face of China's increasing power projection.
And all of a sudden, the Obama administration is using the language of containment to describe Russia. When China hears the word containment, all of a sudden the Asian pivot becomes something that they aren't necessarily wild about, right?
No, I mean, China sees itself as being enclosed by the U.S., and you can understand why. If you look at the map, there's the big American naval air force based in Okinawa, the island chain that goes from Okinawa through Taiwan down to the Philippines, and that's only 100 miles or so off the Chinese coast. So, understandably, from a military point of view, the Chinese feel quite enclosed with this more powerful force there. And then the TPP, which I referred to a moment ago, the attempt to put together a free trade zone of 12 Pacific nations, which would have, whose rules would have excluded China, that obviously is seen as another hostile act. And this comes at a time when the Chinese leader, Xi Jinping, is very much preaching the doctrine of national rejuvenation, military strengthening, and exerting more influence in the region than China has done during its 35 years of economic growth.
Would you say, Jonathan Fenby, that China is encouraged to adopt almost a Putin model to encourage domestic popularity by saber-rattling in the region?
I don't think so, because, I mean, for one thing, following on from that last discussion, I think while Putin is the puppet master at the moment and is pushing, obviously, for a weak Ukraine, a pro-Russian government in Kiev, he's storing up a lot of longer-term trouble. The interesting thing for China in this is whether, if Putin does run into more difficulties with the West, if sanctions increase, for instance, if European dependence on gas, on Russian gas, is reduced, whether Moscow at that point will turn to Beijing as an economic aid, as its new partner, and whether you'll get some relationship there. But the Chinese will play pretty hardball on this. We'll have some indication when Putin goes to Beijing in next month as to whether they do a big gas deal, which has been negotiated for some time, and whether there are other economic conversations between them. I mean, while the Chinese have been caught in Ukraine because they'd lent $6 billion to the previous administration in Kiev in return for food, and they've got hardly anything in return.
So are there nationalist territorial issues brewing in Asia that might be inflamed by what's going on in Ukraine, even if there's no direct ripple effect in Asia?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there are these. There's the China-Japan dispute over some small uninhabited islands, which is really symbolic for hostility between those two big countries, the world's second and third biggest economies, remember, which dates back to the end of the 19th century. You've got Manila, the Philippines, taking a more assertive line towards China. And all these, the disputes, for instance, in the South China Sea, which is 2.5 million square miles, probable energy reserves there, very rich fishing grounds. That is a hotbed of conflicting claims. And I think America's allies are looking to see how much protection they can expect from the White House. And this applies particularly to Japan, which is trying to rewrite its own constitution so that it can play a bigger military role. So I think while all attention is on Ukraine at the moment, there's a lot of potential for some quite serious trouble in East Asia.
It's Jonathan Fenby, author of the book, Will China Dominate the 21st Century? Fyodor Lukyanov, a final thought before we go. We've seen that Vladimir Putin is very defensive about NATO expansion in Europe. Is Vladimir Putin and the Russian government defensive about expansion and containment and cooperation by the U.S. Pivoting to Asia at this point?
It's very complicated constellation of feelings and calculations in Moscow right now. I think Putin, being quite a good tactician and a guy who calculates several factors, he understands very well that position when Russia is in a deep controversy with the United States makes Russia more vulnerable. And China is quite happy about what happens between Moscow and Washington because they see this development as extremely advantageous to them. So I think that Putin, despite this very deep rift with the United States, which I'm afraid will continue quite a long period ahead of us, but he will try to balance rapprochement with China with some other means. For example, trying to strengthen ties with other Asian powers like Japan, South Korea, Vietnam, Singapore, and others.
Talking about a Russian pivot to Asia, that's Fyodor Lukyanov, editor-in-chief of the journal Russia in Global Affairs. He's chair of the Council on Foreign and Defense Policy. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And also thanks to Jonathan Fenby, China director of the research company Trusted Sources and author of Will China Dominate the 21st Century? Always great to talk to you, Jonathan.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.